Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats. The show is about to begin.
Welcome to another edition of Cavs the Podcast. I'm Nate Smith. I'm here with one evil genius and...
No, I said yo.
Oh, yo. Okay. And our newest member to the Cavs the Blog, Cavs the Podcast family, Mitch Sucha. How do I pronounce it? I already screwed it up already.
It's Mitch Suchan, but it's spelled like Suchan, so telemarketers tend to talk down.
Okay, well, you can read about it in the notes for the podcast, but Mitch Suchan, and we are coming off a Cavalier victory over the Minnesota Timberwolves. Andrew Wiggins made it his personal mission to destroy the Cavs tonight, and he scored a game-high 41 against Cleveland. But Cleveland's defense and their execution on offense was good enough to beat the Timberwolves, and despite Wiggins' 41 points on 29 shots, the Cavs came away with a victory. And give me your just kind of knee-jerk thoughts, Mitch.
So knee-jerk, I thought it was interesting how Fry stepped up without Love. I was really excited to see this game kind of how, because Fry would had to be the guy to fill in. And I mean, I was also really surprised by how well the team like adopted to having one of the big players gone. I think the passing was good, and it just seemed like everyone kind of stepped up. Maybe it's the what's that effect called when someone good goes down?
Patrick Ewing theory.
Yeah, the Patrick Ewing theory. So maybe it was just that. But, I mean, with Wiggins being as efficient as good as he did, I really think that the Cavs looked like they were playing well. So,
Yeah, Channing Frye with 21 points and 4 of 11 from 3, 10 rebounds and 2 blocks. And led the team in plus minus at plus 17. It was a pleasant surprise from Channing Frye, who, given starters minutes, really played a very solid game. EG, what do you think of Channing?
Yeah, I mean, I would have given him my game ball. I said it on the thread. Like he had love type numbers tonight, which is what they're going to need from him, or at least the combination of him and Williams and some other guys off the bench over the next 6 weeks to replace that loss. And yeah, he stepped up and he looked really comfortable doing it too, which is what was, I think, probably the most impressive thing, was that he didn't really shy away. He got in there and mixed it up for rebounds. I mean, you know, he got 10 boards against the front line of Karl Anthony Towns and Gorgui Dieng, and Bielitsa is a pretty good rebounder, and what's his name, Cole Aldrich off the bench too. So, I mean, he was in there mixing up. He grabbed boards and he was, he was really assertive, I think, and still was able to, you know, really stretch the defense and look for his shot. I mean, it seemed like he hit more threes than he did. He was only 4 of 11, but the ones that he hit seemed to be at really opportune times.
They were timely.
Yep.
It was weird seeing him. So like when I'm used to watching Chang Fry, like if you just like keep your eye on him for an average game, he'll just kind of get to his spots, try and shake his defender a little bit, get a little bit of room and shoot a three. But like he was moving to parts of the floor that like you never see him move to. And he is kind of like going in directions and ways that I'm not used to seeing him go. And I don't know if that was part of the game plan or if he was just, he just knew that he had a bigger role to play and he was just doing that because he's a smart player. But it was weird seeing him kind of like involve himself in areas of the floor that you never see him in.
Yeah, and he talked about it a little bit after the game. He talked about how the Cavs are trying to get him to roll a lot more. And as he said, more than he ever has in his career. And he says he's still working on it. He's always been more of a pick-and-pop guy, but his pick-and-roll game and finishing at the basket, I feel like, has improved a lot, even though he only had three makes outside of, I guess he was 3 of 4. From inside the lane or yep. inside the 3-point arc. So, you know, he was solid from that area. And if you can keep yourself enough of a threat to keep defenses honest, that's all you really need. And, you know, they were still running that 2-man game between him and, Kyle Korver a little bit. Kyle Korver had a solid game as well, and the whole bench, really. I mean, they had 22 points off the bench between Derek Williams, who had a fantastic game, Richard Jefferson, and then Kyle Korver, who played 27 minutes, you know, only 6 points and 5 boards, but I felt like he really kept the defense honest.
I think he's sneaky good rebounder too. I mean, you know, it's funny. You forget that Korver's as tall as he is. I mean, he is 6'7", and he's just got really good. He's got a really good boxing. He boxes out really well. He's got a really good strategy under the hoop, and he surprises you. And you know, between him and the enchilada tonight, they had 11 rebounds, which That's a great sign to see, you know, because you wonder where, you know, who's going to, you know, because Love is averaging, you know, over 11 a game. So you wonder where they're going to come from. And guys just really stepped up tonight and were hitting the glass.
And Korver even had one of the plays of the evening when he blocked Karl Anthony Towns on a on a layup attempt or a shot at the basket attempt, kind of came from out of nowhere and swatted him out of bounds, and that was a lot of fun, and I'm sure that the guys will give Korver some props, and everyone in the Minnesota locker room will give Cat Karl Anthony Towns some ribbing or getting blocked by a 36-year-old.
Yeah, if I saw that in NBA 2K, I would say that it was cheese and it wouldn't happen in real life. It's like when Dirk dunks all the time in 2K. I'm like, oh, come on. This is such a video game thing. Korver blocking down. Yeah.
It was awesome. It was perfectly timed.
I was thankful it wasn't Tony Brothers refereeing because it would have been a foul.
It would have been a foul, yeah. Although, I will say for the first three quarters of that game, boy, the Cavs could not buy a foul. And there was a lot of very borderline block charge calls, and most of them went against the Cavs.
You mean the two Gorgui Dieng flops?
Yeah. And then LeBron getting called. That one blocking foul on LeBron was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I mean,
well, I think because they had just called one on them the play possession before, and so I think they were just, you know, I think sometimes it's that cumulative effect. That it's almost that sort of like,
especially on the road.
If you won, now we're not going to give you this one. So
yeah, especially
LeBron clearly got the spot in front of Wiggins on that one. Yeah, so.
I feel like they get whenever I watch Wolves Cavs games, I feel like Wiggins gets a lot of calls because LeBron just is so much more imposing than him. So it kind of looks like LeBron's pushing around like a high schooler. Yeah. Like, and Wiggins kind of just bounces off him sometimes. So it's like,
although I will say that LeBron was giving Wiggins a lot of room. That was not LeBron's greatest one-on-one defensive effort against
Chill
Wiggins. Mode. He was definitely playing off him, let him shoot some wide open threes.
Well, I mean, to be fair, Wiggins isn't exactly the greatest three-point shooter. I mean, he's shooting 35% this year, but he's typically only, I mean, he's 32% for his career. So, you know, it's not like you wouldn't give him that shot, but he was hitting enough of them. He was 4 of 8. I mean, he was hitting enough that.
No, he was solid from everywhere. He should have been on.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it would have been nice to, well, we'll get to the guy with the, that must have hurt another tooth. A little bit later, but
No, you don't need to get to him later. I'll get to him.
All right. I mean, look, we've talked about it a lot in the thread, more than a few people asking. And after such a great previous game, the fact that I think Wiggins got off the bench or Liggins, sorry, slip there. Liggins got off the bench for, I think, No, he didn't. They credited him with like 0 minutes, but yeah, because I think they were planning on putting him in for that defensive play to end the half, but they didn't, and it was odd to me. I mean, I sort of expected it with the return of Shumpert, and also the continuing sort of longer look at Derek Williams, but. To not put Liggins in there even for, you know, 5 minutes or so just to cool off or try to cool off Wiggins in that third quarter.
To throw a different look at him defensively.
Yeah. Yeah. Even, I mean, look, it's not that you're going to necessarily stop him, but he could maybe, yeah, give him a different look or slow him down a little bit. But there just didn't seem to be any sort of rhyme or reason for Liggins either starts or he doesn't play, which is sort of a really weird way to handle a player, I think, not only from a rotational standpoint, but just from a psychological standpoint, almost.
Unless it's like
there.
A veteran. Yeah. What at the very saying? Least, I said, unless like a veteran, like you have to play people for their confidence. But at the very least, defensively, Liggins could confuse Wiggins from just a pure like name perspective. Like he'll be like, is this person like the mega version of me? What's going on?
Bizarre Wiggins.
Yeah, well, the other part of it is you just want to throw different, and you want to throw a guy at him that, you know, doesn't have any offensive responsibilities, can just completely sell out defensively. And the other part of it would have been nice to throw Liggins at my boy Ricky Rubio. My boy with 16 assists, Ricky Rubio, just to kind of keep him from getting the other teams off, getting the Wolves offense into a rhythm, which he was fantastic at setting up his teammates tonight.
Yeah. And just, thank God he can't shoot at all.
And he can't make, when I watch Ricky Rubio, I like see him as like the complete opposite of Kyrie Irving. Like he's always looking.
If there
to pass,
was any way to make the $10 any pizza carry,
making contested layups, and he's even pretty bad at like having the confidence to go for open layups, where Kyrie will make any layup you throw at him. But like one of his issues, sometimes he's not looking to pass. So like, I feel like a fusion of like Ricky Rubio and like Kyrie Irving would be like ideal.
Would be the perfect point guard. Yeah. And Ricky Rubio also a much better defender than Kyrie. But I mean, Rubio, right. let's be honest here. Month of February, scoring almost 14 points a game and 10 assists a game and shooting, 42% from the field and 38% from three and 90% from the free throw line. So he is definitely, this was actually a subpar game from him shooting wise. So he has really been shooting well for the past probably 6 weeks or so.
Oh yeah. Well, no, remember in Cleveland, he had a really good first half.
He lit him up
ball.
In Cleveland. Yeah.
But then he realized who he was again in the second half.
Well, I've always been a Ricky Rubio fan, but
I know.
Oh, he had some great passes tonight. And
he had great passes. Although LeBron had the best pass.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah,
the one through Wiggins' legs.
The no look pass through Wiggins' legs for Derek Williams dunk.
Derek Williams, and that pass surprised him. Like he just like looked up, and the pass was in his hands. Yeah.
Did they kind of tried? LeBron seemed to have been trying a similar thing later in the game when the Cavs were up by a lot. It didn't work out.
Yeah, yeah. He was definitely looking to throw the through the eye of the needle tonight, and that time it worked out because And I'm sure that probably embarrassed Wiggins a little bit too, and probably added fuel to his fire.
Oh yeah,
start to fill up the basket. But that was incredible. LeBron, you watch the Vine or the replay of it too, and they slow it down. I hope they do a phantom cam of it, because that's just incredible.
Yeah, and it really did like catch Derek Williams by surprise. He like almost kind of screwed up the layup, but he was so wide open that he just, and Minnesota so bad defensively, he just kind of got it in. But LeBron with a team high 14 assists tonight, just really spreading the rock really well. 10 of 14 from the floor, 2 of 3 with a huge 3 towards the end of the game.
That's his spot too.
Yeah, to get some, the left wing?
Yeah. You paint it on the floor and just say, LeBron's there with the ball. You need to get up on him because he'll hit that shot. Yeah.
His shot is so much smoother right now. Just like his form looks a lot better.
And we've talked about it a lot on the blog, is he's so much better from the left wing than he is from the right wing.
And Kyrie's the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And Kyrie, not a great game. 25 points, 10 of 27 from the floor, although most of that was on 2 of 10 from 3. But
7 assists and no turnovers.
7 assists and no turnovers, had some great passes, really fed Tristan Thompson well, who had 14 and 11. And threw some dimes to Channing Frye as well. And then, as we talked about, Derek Williams off the bench. I don't remember a guy that runs. Man, does he run the floor well.
The fast break.
You know what he reminds me of? He reminds me of, you remember Gerald Wilkins?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like Gerald Wilkins when he was on the Cavs.
Buster?
Yeah, the Jordan Buster. Because he's kind of the same player. Didn't have much of an outside shot. Total slasher, really fast. Was always getting up and down the court. Played pretty good defense and would just dunk on guys like that. That was his game.
That's kind of what Alonzo G was too.
Yeah, but he's Derek Williams more skilled than Alonzo.
And I don't think he has the motor that Williams has either. But, and G could hit that. He could hit that corner three. Well, I guess Williams can't too, but.
Yeah. Mike Schreiner had a great piece today how Derek Williams is about 39% from the left corner and about 35% from the right corner in his career. So, he can hit the corner three. Not a great wing shooter, but if you can hit the corner three, run the floor, dunk, post up, there's a place in the Cavs offense for you.
So. Absolutely. Well, and speaking of Mike's piece, it kind of got, it got overrun a little bit by the Kevin Love news today, but if you haven't had a chance to go back and check it out, go back and take a look. It's really well covers it all. Mike did a really nice job on that piece.
Yeah. Derek Williams. I mean, I would be shocked if the Cavs did not, pretty much pick him up till the end of the year right now with the Kevin Love injury.
Let me ask you, because I know it's been about more to his game than just being able to be athletic. But how about are you after three games? Are you satisfied with the whole enchilada, or are you still hungry?
So on the topic list for this podcast, EG wrote, has the whole enchilada satisfied your hunger yet? So I will say his rebounding needs a little more, but I have been impressed with his defensive versatility. He doesn't seem to have any compunctions with guarding multiple positions. He runs the floor really well. He has really nice hands. He catches a lot of those passes. Like I said, that one pass really seemed to surprise him, yet he got his hands out there, got his hands on it, and put it in the bucket.
He arguably had the dagger steal and dunk at the end.
Oh, that was fantastic, yeah.
And because, I think even more, his skill set's nice, but in terms of fit with the Cavs, We didn't really have someone on the bench who was like that good at the fast break. Shump could really throw it down and he could run, but Shump is bad at dribbling down the floor. And sometimes if he's not dunking it, I'll notice he'll slow down a lot to lay it up because he's not the best at laying it up.
We have an ongoing website that we bought called www.pleasestopdribblingshump.com. Mitch, not as familiar with the Cavs the Blog memes that we have going, but yeah, we are none of us are a fan of Shump dribbling.
There was one possession where Shump dribbled himself into a corner, and then he gave it to Channing, and then Channing had to dribble it and missed it. And I wrote, yeah, any possession that features both Shump and Channing trying to dribble the ball and score is going to end badly. So
as you were saying, you know, Williams is a really good lane filler, and that is not something the Cavs have had on the break a lot. Is a guy that fills the lane. They have a lot of guys that can kind of get the team into the fast break between Kyrie and LeBron and Shumpert, but they don't have a lot of guys that are real great at filling the lane, and that is Derek Williams does that, and he showed it tonight. He really ran the floor well.
He had 6 boards, and he probably should have had 8 because he had 2 wrestled away by Channing under the hoop.
Yeah.
So that literally, like, we're coming right at him, and Channing just, you know, kind of grabbed him. So, you know, you forgive that, but like, even with 6 and 13.6 rebounds in 23 minutes. And that's good contribution there.
Yeah, and what was his plus minus?
15, right behind
15. Yeah,
right behind Fry. Yeah,
and he had a couple huge plays at the end of the game. He had that alley-oop, that great alley-oop from LeBron, and then the steal and the dunk. That steal was fantastic. He really laid out to get that steal and then grabbed it, ran the length of the floor, and threw it in. And
I think Mitch is right, too. Like, they just haven't seen a guy that with that kind of athleticism coming off the bench in a while. And, I mean, you saw it a little bit with just from an athletic sensibility from what's his name, Jared Cunningham last year, but he was a guy, I mean, he had limited skill set. He was just athletic and could be fast, but look, you never know with guys like this. Maybe, you know, the hope for I think all of us is that here's a guy that was once taken number 2 overall in the draft. He's still only 25. You know, he's played for, 9 coaches on 6 different teams, and he's finally playing with a team that's a legit championship contender. And, you know, for a coach that's going to give him – I mean, when's the last time you saw a guy on a 10-day contract get this much run?
He's getting a lot of run for a 10-day guy.
Yogi Ferrell aside, because, you know, we all love Yogi, but
hey, Boo Boo Bear.
Yeah, but I mean, really, you look at it at the production that he's given them in the amount of minutes and the trust. It was him and Korver, both on the floor in crunch time with LeBron, Channing Frye, and Kyrie. So I mean, I should tell you something. Like he was there and he was making a difference. He was and even on balls that he didn't get a hand on, you know, he was pretty aggressive. Like, there was one that looked like Karl Anthony Towns was going to get the offensive board. And he was right there to kind of, you know, befuddle him. And the ball wound up bouncing out to, I think it was Fry at that point. But he's making an impact for sure. We'll see if it continues. I mean, it's only been 3 games, but it feels like they might have gotten really, really fortunate with this pickup, with the timing, you know, with him asking for his release from the Heat and them not really using him much. I went back and looked, and actually when the Cavs played the Heat way back early in the season, he had like 17 points and 5 boards off the bench against the Cavs. So I wonder if, you know, if it kind of goes back to that, where you look at a guy that is pretty impressive playing against you and you say, yeah. If this guy pops loose, we should pick him up. And...
Hey, I cannot argue with it. I'm going to make a confession that I would not normally make, but I've had a couple beers. I was one of the people that was arguing for Derek Williams over Kyrie Irving back in, 2011?
And, yeah, I think a lot of people were.
And I fully admit I was wrong about that. I really, really, really liked Derek Williams in the NCAA tournament. Didn't they take down Duke? Wasn't that the team they beat?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and they got to, they got pretty far in the tournament. They might have been a Final Four team that year. And, yeah, he looked fantastic. Just a really great inside-out game. And I kind of feel like maybe some of the teams that he's been on did not use him off the ball well. Like, man, is he a really good cutter and a really good guy at running the floor. And I'm just kind of shocked that he never kind of caught on with Ricky Rubio maybe this is his time to shine. So I don't know.
You know who would have loved him? Speaking of other underdogs, Delly would have loved playing with him if he was playing like he is right now. Lobs every day. If you're athletic and you're by the rim, Delly will do that thing where he's pretending to do a floater, then he throws a lob.
The flop.
The flop.
Yeah, the flop. Is it a floater or a lob? We don't know. So
both.
Oh my gosh! They just showed on NBA TV that pass between Wiggins' legs. That's going to go on the year highlights. Yeah.
It's got to be top play tonight, yeah. Right?
Yeah, it's on the list for sure. Yeah.
That was LeBron's Valentine's present to Wiggins.
Yeah. Yeah, will you be my Valentine?
Why do we think that Wiggins is still so – I mean, we were talking a little about it before we jumped on, but like, you know, Wiggins is averaging almost 29 points a game against the Cavs, and you know, and he's 0-6 against them. But it just seems like he always plays the game of his life against Cavs. Is it just that he's so obsessed with the team that spurned him and traded him away before he ever had a chance to suit up, or you know, is it just that he gets up to play LeBron?
I think it's a little bit of a couple different reasons. A, LeBron seems to play off him a lot, and the Cavs really let him get into a rhythm tonight. I mean, from the post, from transition, from the 3-point line, they give him a lot of open looks. And you know, if you're playing the Timberwolves, you know, the first guy you got to stop is Wiggins, and second guy you got to stop is Cat, depending on, you know, what your priorities are. But the Cavs certainly gave him a lot of room, and he does seem, I think anytime you're against a team that spurned you or a team that, you know, passed you over, you know, you look at Russell Westbrook versus the Wizards or versus the Warriors, 40 some points. You always get up for those games. And Wiggins just does for whatever reason. And the Cavs don't seem to defend him very well and he's a really good post up player. When that part of his game is rolling.
Oh yeah. He posted up LeBron a couple of times.
Yeah. And he's a really good slasher, and he was, his outside shot was working tonight. So when you got all that going, it's hard to stop a guy who is, you know, 6'9", 6'8", and uber athletic.
6'8". Yeah. I think the problem though was they because of how hot he got right at the end of the third quarter there when he tied it up on that last second to whatever it was. It was that flurry at the end, but it felt like they really got away from getting in the ball into Towns in the towards the end of the game. Yeah. And, you know, when you got a guy like Towns playing against, you know, Tristan, 6'9", Tristan Thompson, and even though, you know, Fry's 6'11 or 7 foot or whatever, like those guys aren't going to stop Towns if he gets the ball deep enough. So just felt like they got you know, that Wiggins got a little shot happy towards the end, and they probably should have had a better, probably should have had a better strategy there. But I mean, look, they're down Zach LaVine, and I think the Cavs caught a break tonight early on when Lance Stephenson went down with the ankle problem, because, you know, he looked pretty good. I mean, his first two shots, and he was definitely giving them a spark off the bench in the first quarter.
Yeah.
So,
kind of their big backup wing. So,
yeah.
I mean,
he probably had a chip on his shoulder too for the Cavs not signing him to the 10-day.
Yeah, and you saw a lot more probably of Dunn than you might have otherwise. And you saw possibly a little, and the starters played a little more than they might have otherwise. I mean, Ricky Rubio, 39, Wiggins, 41. If they had Stephenson, maybe those guys don't play as much. So,
yeah.
And I was kind of bummed the Cavs missed out on Stephenson, but, maybe this is kismet, you know.
a little bit of Valentine's Day kismet, huh?
Yeah, and so one of the other topics that you had on your list was Shumpert. What did you see from Shumpert tonight, Mitch? Was it just kind of like feeling his way back in?
Yeah, I mean, I never know how to feel about Shumpert, because his shot sometimes looks so good, but then he'll airball it next possession. So it's kind of like he just is either feeling it or he's not. But like, he's not like a good microwave like J.R. Smith, where he gets really hot for a long time. He just, you know, it's just I don't know how to gauge what temperature Shump is at any given moment. But I think he will get better. Yeah.
Yeah, E.G., what do you think of Shump tonight?
Well, he started strong. I mean, he hit like two of his first three threes, but then he was like one for six after that. And I think he ran out of gas a little bit too. I think his legs probably aren't all the way back from, you know, not playing the last few days and having the ankle injury. You know, because the first couple of shots he took looked really good. They looked like, hey, that's just a continuation of, you know, pregame warmups, and the stroke was on. But then, you notice he didn't play much in the latter half of the third or fourth quarter. I mean, they went more with Korver and Williams on the wings, and even Jefferson only played 11 minutes. So, you know, I think Chump will come. I mean, he'll be fine. He'll come back, you know, just fine. But sort of, no, it is a little bit
feeling his way back a little bit.
Yeah, it's a little weird though. I mean, he really only like spotted up shooting tonight, except for that one little excursion with the dribbling.
The Cavs had 39 3-point attempts a night, which is a very large number.
Oh yeah. I'm just saying he only, I mean, he was three of nine.
Yeah,
he was three of nine, but three of eight from the 3-point. He only took one shot and missed it inside the arc. So just, you know, and I think that was a long two. Like, I don't think he went to the rack at all.
It was weird because like Korver, who's 36, was moving a lot more and like really working to get to a spot more than Shump. So like, it did seem like Shump was like just not physically all there. I mean, but I think even when Shump's healthy, Korver moves more than Shump. Shump can really learn a lot from watching Korver play.
I think most NBA players could learn a lot from watching Korver move without the ball.
Korver and J.J. Redick. Just watch those two and you could...
Well, Korver's helped Tristan Thompson become almost a better free throw shooter than LeBron these days. So maybe LeBron ought to be, you know...
Playing a little horse with
Korver in the coming days. So
yeah, it might not be a bad idea. So the other ongoing storyline with LeBron, we will now play the Cavs of Blogs Minutes Police. We don't have any sound effects.
Yeah, we need sound effects.
Yeah, we do. We need some sound effects. Otherwise,
I can hold my cat up to the computer.
Mitch, that's your. You got to figure out how to. We got to get bring us into the 21st century with some sound effects.
Bring us into the 20th century. You know, we're in the days of Marconi still here. So,
you know, you see a new Charlie Chaplin film?
Yeah, so the minutes police, LeBron had 33 minutes at the end of the third, and we were all like, what's going to happen here? Is Lou going to give – he played what, the entire third?
Entire third quarter, which I didn't understand at all. It was almost like Ty Lue like forgot that he was out there, and it was like, oh, right, I forgot to give LeBron his third quarter break.
Because there was really no reason. He's not superhuman.
No, but yeah, but they were up by 14 at one point, I think. I mean, it just kind of silly. You know what I mean? Like you and then, you know, they took him out because he was clearly gassed at the end of the third because he wasn't really guarding Wiggins much. He had that layup that he missed from the other side of the hoop, which was really uncharacteristic. And then he had that sort of like really like lazy sloppy pass. That led to the turnover that led to the Wiggins last second two to tie it up. And then to start the fourth quarter, you know, he wasn't, because you can't play him that long, but with LeBron out, the Cavs outscored the Wolves for the first five and a half minutes of the fourth quarter, 12-8. So, you know, at some point, Ty is going to have to start trusting the other guys a little bit more. And maybe it's not him. Maybe it's LeBron just saying, no, I'm staying in and waving him off. But I don't know. I mean, for there's a lot of lip service that's been paid by Ty Lue to say he's going to manage the minutes and he's going to, start cutting it back. And, and he agreed with today and saying like with Love being out, we can't just lean on LeBron. You know, we can't just play LeBron more minutes. That's not going to work. But then, he goes out and plays 40 and he doesn't practice what he's preaching. So I don't know. I don't know what to make of that. It's my one big pet peeve with this coach because he does – most everything else I love about Ty Lue.
Well, I have two pet peeves, that and DeAndre Liggins' bizarre minutes allotments. But yeah, I'm totally with you. LeBron's minutes, I just don't understand you have to develop a rotation, and then tonight we kind of saw a different rotation than we're used to seeing, because normally we see LeBron go out towards the end of the third, and then we start the fourth with what I call the Le Scrub lineup, or you call the Wildcat offense.
Wildcat offense. It's not the Scrub bad anymore, because they've been much better ever since they've got Korver integrated, and now they've picked up put Williams in there. Like,
it's basically LeBron, Korver.
That unit helped them get to 43 points in the second quarter. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's LeBron, Korver, and three Arizona Wildcats with Fry, Jefferson, and Derek Williams. So,
yep.
And Derek Williams instead of Kay Felder is a sea change in terms of saneness on offense. You don't have 5'8". Kay Felder setting screens.
They should send poor Kay down to the D League, because I don't think he's unless barring injury, God forbid, I don't think Felder sees another meaningful minute of regular season.
Well, or postseason if that's the case.
Oh yeah, for sure not postseason. But I think you would think you would. If you have a guy like that, you'd try to develop him throughout the season.
Yeah,
but
no, I mean,
I think it seems like that's just not in the cards for Kay. Who knows? I'll say that and he'll play, 20-25 minutes tomorrow because Ty Lue decided, oh, this is what I'm doing today.
Well, so tomorrow is a back to back, so who knows how many guys are going to rest.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, if Kay Felder was a kitten, he'd be shoved in a sack with a brick and dropped over a bridge. So
now don't go that far.
That's a terrible name for a children's book.
Look, Kay, I like Kay. I don't like Kay as much as JK does. But
John Crawley, I don't think people like Adele as much as John Crawley likes Kay Felder. So.
Well, I like Kay Felder. I just don't think – I mean, he'd be much better served him and McRae probably being sent down to the D-League.
Well, you know not my nickname for McRae. I call him McCrap because he's not good. And I liked McRae going into the season, but oh my lord, he is painful to watch. I was talking about it with somebody at work today. Is like one of the I feel like a lot this season David Griffin has zigged when he should have zagged. And Jordan McRae not cutting him before the deadline, I felt like that was a, you know, maybe you should have zagged. Maybe you should have cut McRae. But
unless he's going to use him for a piece in a trade, I don't see any value there, unfortunately. But no. But look,
Griffin's kind of been less bold, I feel like, and he's usually like seems really aggressive. Maybe it's LeBron stuff. I don't know, but I have the same sentiments about Griffin this year.
Yeah, just he's zigging when he should zag.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, look, the dude still got his Kyle Korver, and he picked up Derek Williams. And
the Derek Williams pickup is looking pretty prescient right now. So
is the Kyle Korver pickup.
Well, we'll see.
I know, you're still
hedging my bets. But
look, when Kyle Korver isn't getting the ball and getting shots, the fact that he's in there mixing it up and getting five boards and blocking a shot and getting
a steal, he's still better.
That's a guy. I'll take that guy any day on my team.
He is still better than human straw man Mike Dunleavy Jr. So, you know, Mike Dunleavy Jr., who could be blown over by a stiff breeze.
You mean Glass Joe?
Glass Joe, yeah.
I swear to God, he looks just like the guy from Punch-Out.
Oh, he does. He looks exactly like Glass Joe. So, some of the other storylines going out today, you know, one of the things you talked about, Life After Love, was what we saw tonight, e.g., a little glimpse of life after Kevin Love injury, out for 6 weeks.
Well, geez, I hope so, because if Channing Frye can play anywhere close to this on a regular basis, which I don't think he can. I think most teams are going to do a better job. I mean, look, Minnesota, even though they have Tom Thibodeau as their coach, they haven't bought into his defensive system yet. I mean, it's only year one. I think it'll be much better next year. But these guys, when you watch them out there, they don't have a lot of – and they don't have as many bodies as they need to with Levine out. And, you know, they could really use a Shump type, actually. But they – yeah, they
– they could use Jordan McRae, I'm just saying.
Absolutely. No, but they didn't – I don't think they really know the scouting report that well. And, you know, because – a lot of the shots that Fry took were wide open threes. And I think part of that's just, you know, just Cat being young and he doesn't know to
well, it's
follow
not just
a guy
Cat,
that
it's also far. Gorgie Dang is not a lot, not a guy that likes to come out of the paint.
Not at all. So when you're going to give Channing Fry open shots like that, he's going to kill you all day. So I don't expect that to happen against better defensive teams, but you know, look, I think if they got half of the production that Channing gave them tonight and the rest of it was filled in, you know, with Williams, Jefferson and Korver helping out. I mean, you know, Champ unfortunately played 9 minutes and did very little with those 9 minutes, and those would have been a nice 9 minutes to get to Liggins. But yeah, I think in the post-Love world, I mean, I'm sure the Cavs were up for it tonight because, you know, I mean, they had a couple of days off. They, you know, they all probably knew that they were going out there and, you know, they were playing a young team and that they felt like they could get up and down the floor on. Well, you know, tomorrow will be a little bit different playing against, you know, on a second night of a back-to-back playing against an arrested Indiana team, even at the queue. So, you know,
and
it's
always plays them tough.
Well, it's the last game before the All-Star break too. So you question just how you know, checked in either LeBron or Kyrie will be when they're thinking about the weekend ahead. So, I mean, look, it's going to be,
are they going to be in party planning mode?
I think they're going to have some, look, Ty doesn't have to coach them. So I think he and his staff will get together and start figuring out even more ways to use these new lineups that they're starting to take a look at, and and using those to exploit ways to do even more with the basketball. I mean, people sort of, don't really pay attention to this, but the Cavs are actually, when it's just LeBron and Kyrie playing, the Cavs are, and without Love, the Cavs are 11-3, I think, and now they're 12-3. So they'll be okay, I think, as long as Ty can, actually, practice what he preaches and start managing LeBron's minutes, because I think if they do that, they'll keep him fresher, and they've got guys now who can actually do something with the ball. So, I think we'll see what happens after the All-Star break, but at least they have it sort of lining up well for the meat grinder that's going to be the month of March.
Yeah. So the month of March is pretty tough. A lot of above 500 teams, a lot of guys you're going to see in the playoffs, in the Eastern Conference.
Six back-to-backs in March.
Yeah, it's not going to be an easy schedule. And so one of the things I'm going to ask you, Mitch, are the Cavs going to add anybody? Is these last roster spot that is open, and then there's also Jordan McRae's roster spot. Is there going to be a trade? They're going to add somebody in free agency. What do you see happening?
So I feel like the front office had their eye on Korver and picking up someone else, and I don't know if they're going to make any big moves. I could be wrong, but I mean, on paper our team seems pretty good, and I don't really see any huge things that could happen to change them too much in either direction in any real meaningful way. But if someone else has some stuff to spitball, and maybe the Raptors' recent trade for Ibaka might force the Cavs to want to shake things up. But I've tried to think of things that would make an impact, and it's really hard given our budget constraints and just what we need versus what exists on the market.
Yeah, and my big thing is, sign another center, get a big body from the D League. I've been pitching for Keith Benson, who's pretty much the best big man in the D League right now.
Unless you ask Nomad.
Along with Eric Moreland, who's playing for the Canton Charge. The problem with Moreland is he shoots 40% from the free throw line.
So does LeBron, so...
That is not true.
50%.
60. Come on.
Late the last month, it's been like 50%.
So, even then, LeBron is... He makes them when they count, right? Wasn't that Hopefully. Shaq's claim to fame? Make them when they count, and my counter was always, don't they all count?
Well, Nate, do you see anybody out there, though? I mean, realistically, I mean, look, the Windhorst
as a trade target or as a...
Well, yeah, either a trade target or possible buyout. I mean, I just say this because Windhorst made a point earlier today or on the radio show this morning saying that, the fact that the Cavs did the deal for Chris Anderson, the Birdman, was sort of it was a little bit of a signal that they weren't going to make a big trade, because why would you get rid of that? Anderson is an asset, as a salary that you could utilize in a, in offsetting money in bringing a guy in. Granted, it cleared up a roster space, but you would do the same thing if you, if you were getting rid of him too. So,
what a counter argument has been that there was a piece today, and I don't know who reported it, but that basically David Griffin has the green light to spend as much as he wants to bring somebody in. So,
Sam Amico reported that.
Yeah, so. I mean, I pitched the idea today of who's the guy you like from New Orleans?
Tim Frazier.
Tim Frazier and Alex Anginsa from New Orleans. And, eating Njinsa's contract might be a be enough to pick up a guy like Tim Frazier as a backup point guard, and then you've got a big man, and that kind of solves everything. But you know, that's one of those deals that there are guys out there that do fit into the Cavs are you know salary trade exceptions. I don't think there was an outside chance before you might have seen Channing Frye traded if the right deal came along, but I don't think you see that with Love out now.
Yeah,
and I don't think you see Love getting traded. Teams are very loath, even guys with minor injuries. Teams do not like to trade for guys that are injured.
I bet Phil Jackson would, but you know, it's still even trading an injured Love for Melo would be silly, I think, because you're still going to get Love back. You still get Love back with a couple of weeks left before the playoffs start, and even 75% of Love at 75% still probably more of an asset to this team than Melo would be.
No, and I'm happy. You know, not happy, but if the injury was going to happen, this is the way that works out best for the Cavs. You know, minor meniscus tear, probably an injury that he could have played through if it was the playoffs, but if it's going to happen and you're going to take care of it now. You know, they have 10 games to get ready for the playoffs in, 6 weeks. I don't think anybody cares. As long as the Cavs are a top four seed, I don't think anybody cares that much. And I don't think anybody realistically thinks that the Cavs aren't going to be the number one seed in the East. So, you know, unless Boston makes a blockbuster to add a superstar and they seem just completely...
Well, there's not many superstars left that they can get. I mean... You know, the Atlanta's basically said they're not trading Millsap now.
Yeah, and
Sacramento's not trading. Table. Yeah, and Sacramento said they're not trading Cousins.
Yeah,
so that really leaves the where there's smoke, there's fire.
Yeah, the only other guy out there is Jimmy Butler. Yeah,
yeah.
And
so and they'd
Boston
have to do like a
loath to trade said, their assets. So.
Well, and somebody said they'd have to do like a Herschel Walker type deal to get Jimmy Butler, which means like they'd have to literally like give them all, just put all their assets in a truck and back it up.
Yeah, and
give him like Jay Crowder and probably Marcus Smart and a few other pieces that they don't want to give up.
Yeah, and my opinion would be I would probably actually do that deal, but I have not followed the draft this year well enough to know. You know how good the top of the draft is this year.
I've heard it's very good. I mean, you know the few articles I've read say that it's one of the deeper drafts in a while. You know, and you've got guys like Lonzo Ball and a few other. I blanked on a couple of the other names, but you know we'll see. I mean we'll probably know a lot more come tournament time. You know who the upcoming stars are going to be or not. But you know one thing for sure is that the Celtics are going to have a top four pick at least with Brooklyn's pick that they own outright. So you know they could have the number one overall. They could have the number one seed if the Cavs falter in March, and they could have the number one overall draft pick next year. So, you know, things are looking up for Beantown.
Yeah,
I don't think it's worth for them to trade like a top four pick. I mean, they're good now, but there's just no reason they have to be in urgent win now mode like the Cavs were when LeBron came.
It's true. I mean, they only really have one star, and he's 5'9". So
yeah,
he's a dwarf star.
Yeah,
very hot, but very long lifespan.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, and I don't. I mean, do you think Mitch the Ibaka trade moves the needle much for the Raptors?
So
is it something the Cavs have to worry about?
I actually wrote down a little bit on that. Like, when the Cavs were facing the Raptors last year, Bismack was doing major work and just looked great. I was like, wow, I never knew Bismack Biyombo had this in him. But Ibaka kind of brings some of those skills, like actually protecting the paint and getting blocks, you know, having quick enough feet to actually do some help defense, a lot of stuff that Valanciunas lacks. But then Ibaka also gives you three shooting and mid-range shooting and has like somewhat of a post game as well. So, I mean, if it plays out well and they play Ibaka to his strengths, I think it can make him a lot better, especially. But, I mean, this all comes down to them adapting someone to their offense who's drastically different from someone they currently have in time to play Cavs in the playoffs.
Yeah, and one of the big things that came up today in some of the emails that we had back and forth was that the Raptors gave up a pretty significant bench piece in Terrence Ross, who scores about 10 points a game, top wing off the bench, and, you know, a good 3-and-D guy, plays defense, shoots threes and dunks. And they gave that up, and for a guy that, you know, is good but is not the player he used to be. And, you know, is Ibaka going to really turn that around? I kind of feel like that team has four power forwards now.
Yeah. I wonder if they'll make another deal and ship out Patterson for some extra help on the wing.
Yeah.
Because Patterson's a bit of a redundancy now with Ibaka, because Patterson's, you know, just like not as you know, much of a rebounder and defensive player. You know, he's really kind of the guy who's just out there to help stretch the floor and hit threes.
Yeah.
Which is weird because, you know, ironically, I always felt like the biggest mistake the Raptors ever made was you know, giving DeMar DeRozan the max, because why would you give a max to a shooting guard who can't hit threes? And I think that's a problem. You know, I mean, Lowry can hit him, but Lowry's best at you know, the dribble drive game and the, you know, the drive and dish. So, you know, it's just a lot of money to tie up in a guy that you know, is fairly one or two dimensional in DeRozan.
Yeah,
I think they were banking on his development more so. Like that's what Toronto's always been doing with DeRozan, is banking that he'd make the leap.
And yeah, that's how you have to do. But how old is he now?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much, if he hasn't become a...
If he hadn't made the leap by now, I wouldn't think he's going to.
If he hasn't become a good three-point shooter.
Well, he started the season like he made a leap, but...
Yeah, but it was still two-pointers. Like, he was hitting mid-range.
He was playing like Jordan.
Yeah, he's shooting 27% from three this year, so...
I guess he's 27. I mean, I guess he's sort of like entering prime, but...
No, 27%. From three.
Not prime.
He's shooting his age.
He's shooting his age. He actually is shooting his age, yes.
Yeah, no, I don't... that team is probably... could give up Patterson and get somebody back, but I don't know who they're going to get for wing shooting. You know, wing shooting is at a premium right now. If you 3-and-D guys that can consistently put the ball in the bucket are gonna make money in this market right now. I mean, I shudder to think what CJ Miles is gonna get on the open market this year.
I mean, CJ Miles.
Yeah, or as we called him back in the day, 3J. You know,
yeah, I don't. CJ Miles hits threes when they don't matter. He never hits them when they do. Look at the game they just played against him. He hits threes when it doesn't matter in the first half, and when it does matter, he goes ice cold. That is the nutshell.
Yeah, we had that. The splits were like when the game was within 5 points, he shoots like 28%, and it's when the game is like a double-digit difference, he shoots in the 40s. So, yeah, I mean, you are correct. But
pressure thing. He's great when it's, you know, when it's guys are laying off and it's open gym time, but, you know, when the pressure gets turned up and guys are in his face, he can't make them.
Yeah,
but he just passed to Kyrie Irving.
Stop him from getting paid?
No, I think he'll get paid.
That's my point.
And he won't get, I mean, it won't be like a max or anything like that, but no, yeah, I could see CJ Miles getting like a 4-year, $70, $80 million deal. Sure.
Insane. I mean, it's just nuts. This NBA market is just.
But there are teams insane that still haven't hit the floor. There are teams that have to take on salary at the trade deadline, so just so that they don't get penalized for not spending enough, right?
Well, and there are teams that just desperately need shooting. I mean, Oklahoma City could use shooting so badly right now.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah, I mean, they could just – I mean, their best shooter right now, aside from Westbrook, is probably Anthony Morrow, and –
Well, think about how much outside shooting they lost. They lost Durant, they lost Dion Waiters, and they lost Ibaka from last year's team.
Yeah.
Think about all the outside shooting you have with those three guys at their positions.
Especially the way Dion is playing this year, which I'm loving. I'm loving peak Dion. So,
oh, look, if they had a crystal ball, they never would have let him go. I mean, he would be a perfect complement to Russell right now, the way he's playing.
Yeah. Well,
I mean,
and
yeah,
the
then
whole,
he's kind
much
of
more
what
so
they want.
Than Oladipo.
Yeah, he's what they want Oladipo to be.
Yep.
Which
it's so weird.
Yeah, and I'm loving the whole Dion experience in Miami. I hope he gets crazy money.
He should. He should.
And they have it
to give to him, I think, right?
And as a dark horse for, you know, against the Cavs in the playoffs. I don't really want to go to Miami. LeBron, weird things happen to LeBron when he goes to Miami. So,
although you think, I mean, none of his friends are there anymore.
Well, some of his friends, you know, Udonis Haslem's still there.
He beat him pretty convincingly this year. When it was the first year where I kind of felt like there wasn't that weirdness when they played.
Yeah, and
him,
I feel like Kyrie has a chip on his shoulder against Dion too. So
that's true.
Although Dion has a chip on his shoulder against Kyrie, so
what's hopefully funny is that when they played together, Dion got to the rim kind of just like Kyrie when they were young, but you know, Dion just couldn't finish. But I was always like, oh, if Dion could just finish, he'd be a pretty good player. But yeah. Now he's finishing.
Dion spent too much of his energy yelling "and one" at the top.
And waving his hands up and down when he was open at the three-point line. So,
yeah.
And so, unnecessarily fading as well. Yeah. That was always fun.
So, Nate, what do you I'll ask both of you guys, Nate and Mitch. What do you guys think in the wake of the Kevin Love, you know, injury that kind of snuck up on him? And then, I mean, do you think it, you know, two-part question, do you think it was an ongoing thing because he did miss a couple of games earlier in the season with the same problem to the same knee? Or do you think it was something that happened in the last couple of games? And if that's the case, then should he have played in that, you know, in the back-to-back? Should he have played against Denver the other night at all?
I heard it happened in the Denver game. Did I get that incorrect?
Well, there's been conflicting reports whether it happened in the Denver game or if it was sort of an ongoing thing that just got aggravated in the Denver game.
I don't know. I think most of that is just, you know,
speculation.
It's much ado about nothing. I mean, you play the hand you're dealt. If he didn't feel that he could play anymore, and this is kind of what the team and the doctors decided, I mean, that's just kind of what you deal with.
Are you worried at all, though, that he has now become, now that he's had he never had surgery on the knee before. Now he's had actual, even though it's minor, there's, you know, kind of no such thing as minor surgery to your knee. So now that he's sort of in that group of guys that get, that, you know, that's had knee surgery, does that change your outlook on Kevin Love about how long he plays, or if he's, do you think, you know, I mean, they're saying 6 weeks. Do you feel like he's he makes it back to the same level he was playing at, just last week.
I totally think he makes it back to the same level he's playing
at. And, I mean, meniscus injuries, like guys like Westbrook and Wade, whose game is so reliant on athleticism, will come back from meniscus just fine, if not better. And Love's game is more just about, you know, being smart and moving well and just being in the right spot and being skilled. So I don't think it'll really impact him that much.
You think he'll make it back in time this year? Or do you think it'll be even more limited going back, joining the team and going back to the playoffs?
I think he'll be ready by the time the playoffs start to matter.
Yeah.
By the time.
And let's look at the box scores he was putting in, in the last five games. If it was happening before the Denver game, since he kind of came back from the back injury, 21 points, almost 12 rebounds, 46% from the field and 47% from three and 94% from the line. I don't see those numbers, you know, even if those numbers fell off a little bit, those are still elite numbers. So I'm not worrying about it from that perspective.
I agree, by the way. I was just curious if you guys had a different or alternate opinion on that. But
if it was Kyrie,
also 1.6 steals. His defense the last five games has been really good. I mean, you look at that Washington game, he switched out on Beal and Wall at the end of those games, shut him down, has a lot of steals, really good at breaking up the pick and roll and reading the passing lanes. I've been just super thrilled with, and that is in 35 minutes a game he's putting up those numbers. So those are very elite numbers.
Does he seem more athletic to you guys this year than he did last year or the year before?
Well, he seems stronger early in the season, but the back injury robbed him of a lot of that upper body.
I think he's been more confident this year than anything because he's got the monkey off his back and they won the championship. You know, he contributed. It wasn't just it was a lot of the Kyrie and LeBron show, but it wasn't just solely that. And he had a play. One of the best things that ever happened was the fact that LeBron was the one that originally pointed out and said, that stop of Steph Curry was just as important as the block and the shot. So, you have that, it had this nice, balanced feel to it where all three of the guys made a contribution to win that title. Which was important, I think, because he got knocked out of the game two with a concussion and missed game three where they blew out the Warriors and, I think he was playing with a lot more confidence this year. That's what I noticed about him more than anything. Where
less hesitant.
Yeah, it's just decisive. He would more often than not, because he does that. Sometimes I hate it when he gets the ball and does the pump fake, and then it's either to try to draw the guy in, or just that he's hesitant that he doesn't. And more often I saw him go up where he just go straight up with the shot and make it. And when he would do that, he'd square his shoulders and he'd make the shot. And it just, I think when he hits a couple of those, just, the confidence just goes through the roof. So,
there's been other aspects of his game. His left hand is light years better than I've ever seen it. I mean, he actually can shoot the ball with a left hand this year. We've seen, left-handed layups and hook shots and finishes when, last year he was just shooting over the wrong shoulder, and his footwork is better. He can go up off either foot now. And his upper body was really looking good till, that back injury.
Yep.
And his free throw shooting is really, really good now. I mean,
yeah, like 24 in a row there in that one stretch.
Yeah. 24, 25. In the last several games. And he can get himself to the line. I mean, he's getting himself to the line about, six attempts per game this year.
Yep.
So, yep. And shooting at a 88% clip. So you can't argue with that. And his defense has been better. So he's, you know, how many 2010 guys are there in the league right now? There's not very many.
It's like five. Yeah. He's one of them.
Yeah, and he's one of them, and I would argue that he's probably got the best true shooting percentage of all of them. So,
yeah. He does it all very low-key. He just puts up the numbers, but you're like, oh, did Kevin Love, did he score like 10?
Yeah, I mean, you look up, he's one of those guys that even if he doesn't have a great number from the field, you'll look up and, oh, he got to the line seven times and made them all, you know.
Yep. Well,
he's very solid.
Yeah. So, are we long in the tooth yet?
We're getting there a little bit, but
Mitch,
else?
That'll be something you'll have to learn. You'll learn about our podcast.
They tend to get a little long.
Tom Pestick says they get a little long in the tooth, and
at least we didn't break our tooth.
Yeah, that's true. Exactly. At least we didn't have a toothache, which is the most bizarre excuse for not playing a guy I've ever heard. So,
one time for a high school job, I was planning on quitting. I called in and said that my tongue hurt. So that was my best DNP.
Well, I dislocated my jaw once, and I had to call off for that, and it was from yawning. I had a yawning injury.
Wow.
Well, why were you yawning? Oh, because I hate my job.
Well, I work 9 p.m. to 5 a.m., so yeah, that would be why. And then I went to school full-time, so.
I got out of a meeting today because last night I spilled a bunch of hot bacon grease on my hand and got like a second-degree burn. So.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh. That's terrible.
No, it was really horrible. Like I was watching, you know, it's like watching, I forget whatever game it was, with like my hands in a bowl of water, just trying to recover from the intense pain.
I'm sorry, I'm trying not to laugh. I apologize.
That's the most American injury I've ever
heard. That is a very American injury.
Yeah, you wouldn't hear that too many places.
Yeah. Yeah. So anything that you'd like to pitch, EG, anything you've been watching or holding your interest of late?
I loved the I've been waiting a long time for this show, and it finally aired last week. But I was I'm not sure where it's going, but I was impressed with how it was shot and the sort of like incongruous way they told the story. But it's Legion,
the FXX comic. Is it FX or FXX?
It's FX, but it's okay. But really well done. It's by Noah Hawley, who did the first couple seasons of Fargo, the TV show, and just signed a big deal with 20th Century Fox to do movies now. But really talented guy, and just really interesting cast. He actually brought back a couple of people from the second season of Fargo, and then Dan Stevens is the lead.
Is in the X-Men universe, correct?
Yeah, well, it's a Marvel. It's based on a comic book, a Marvel comic book. It's in the X-Men universe, but it's not, you know, it's not quite as overtly a superhero movie. It's a little darker than that. So, or superhero show, like it's a. I would say more akin to what Netflix has done with like Daredevil and that whole, you know, sort of
Daredevil
world.
And Jessica Jones Janelle. And, you know, yeah, Lucas Cage, that kind of thing. Yeah,
exactly. But yeah, really, really interesting show. It's only been one episode, so I'm only, you know, and I can't binge watch it like I normally like to do with my shows these days.
Yeah,
so.
I will wait till it is out on a.
I think it's only going to be an eight part season, so you won't have to wait long.
Yeah,
I actually got.
Sorry, go ahead, Mitch.
I actually got knee surgery recently, and like all I did was binge watch stuff, and like plus I was on pain pills, so it was like it's pretty great. Like Westworld blew my mind like twice as much as
Westworld was fantastic. Westworld was probably my favorite show I saw this year, and there have been some great shows. I mean, the OA.
Did you finish the OA, Nate?
I got one episode left, and then.
Do you see what I meant? Did you see what I meant?
I did. I saw that, and I didn't mind when it got a little bit supernatural.
Well, don't ruin it. Don't ruin it for people. But yeah,
well, I didn't give too much away there, did I?
No, that's true. No, I don't think so.
Okay, and then the other show that I really enjoyed was The Expanse, as is described, Game of Thrones in space. that was an entertaining show as well, and I'm looking forward to. I really want to watch Hell or High Water, the Best Picture nominated movie. So
very underrated. It's a really good movie.
Yeah, well, a lot of people are thinking it might have a shot at Best Picture. So
I don't think it'll go that far, but I do think it's really worth your time, more so than some of the other nominations. So
it's funny. The Game of Thrones of blank is like the Uber of blank.
Yeah, that is the new trend. Yeah. Lyft is the new Uber, the non alt right Uber. So.
Yeah. And then for all you, if you're going to say for all you Father John Misty fans out there, there's the new album's coming out.
How's the new
in a
album?
Weeks.
I haven't heard it yet.
I've only heard two songs off it because they've only released
it's
two
very
on iTunes.
What I've heard is very different from the last album. Much
isn't it
going to
be like
up?
Isn't it going to like 20-minute songs in it and stuff like
the first two are normal. First two are like under six, so
yeah.
And Fleet Fox is making a new album as well.
And if you haven't heard it, the Sturgill Simpson album, A Sailor's Map of the World, won the Grammy for Best Country Album. So big ups for Sturgill Simpson, and I won't pitch Adele since she doesn't need me to pitch her, but
who's Adele? I've never heard of her.
But Sailor's Map of the World's great album. And if anybody has any album suggestions, put them on the comment section, because I'm a little music starved right now. I need to get some new stuff in my rotation. So
there should be some good stuff coming out this year, but we'll see.
We shall see. And any movies coming out?
Well, I did see the Batman Lego movie this weekend, which was thoroughly good. Thoroughly enjoyable.
Okay, I'll take my kids to see that.
Will Arnett as Batman is just sounds hilarious, just in premise. So
just kind of genius. Yeah, he's pretty great. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely it's fun for the whole family. You know,
unlike 50 Shades of Grey 2 or whatever.
That's fun for no one in the family. Even people.
My
think wife like.
Literally went and saw it twice last weekend. So you know, $20 out of my checking account was supported that. I was very bitter about that. But
she's basically donating from your checking account to support bad writers.
Yes, yes, but yeah. So what's the other movie? So what's coming out in March? E.G., what's the big movie coming out in March?
I mean, you got Logan coming out.
Oh, Logan, I really want to see Logan because that preview looked really good.
Yeah, the Wolverine. I mean, it's only the second R-rated Marvel movie that's been made after Deadpool.
Hey, Patrick Stewart dropped an F-bomb in the preview. It's got to be good.
Yeah. Well, it's the last movie that both he and Hugh Jackman are going to do as their respective characters. So if you're a big X-Men fan, make sure you go check that out. You got Kong Skull Island coming out March 10th. So lots of big creatures in that if you feel so inclined.
Patrick Stewart plays a Patrick Stewart for American Dad in a Logan.
and Beauty and the Beast comes out March 17th. Yeah. My kids
speaking of Dan Stevens, he's unrecognizable as the Beast in that, but supposedly very good. The Trainspotting sequel comes out that
what?
Same weekend.
There's a Trainspotting sequel?
Is
more heroin
this time. In it?
Yeah.
Yes, he is. If you're a fan of the original, then you'll probably
fan of the original.
There's actually a second book which it's based on.
I assumed.
Yeah. So, but the second book, I never read it, but I heard it's good too. So
But I really think based on the trailer, the breakout movie of March is probably going to be Ghost in the Shell.
Oh, man, I'm worried about that film because, like, first of all, everyone's white. Second of all, I mean, like, it's such a classic anime. It's so good. And it's just like, I just feel like Hollywoodizing it might not translate some of the things that made it awesome.
Oh, I want to ask you, EG, did you see John Wick 2 yet?
I haven't yet, but I'm going to see it this week.
Okay.
I am going to see it this week.
And I've heard
it's awesome.
And Mitch, I share your reservations on Ghost in the
You didn't like Lucy the first time?
Lucy you're gonna was use not good.
If you use 80% of your brain, you could That's make right. anime real life.
Yeah, no. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I get so tired of the science is magic fallacy.
Yeah, well, Ghost in the Shell actually had explanations for a while.
Well, no. I'm not arguing with Ghost in the Shell. I'm arguing with Lucy, so.
Oh, yeah, Lucy. Yeah, that was. And then, like, you know, the whole you don't use all of your brain thing is a complete farce to begin with, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the funny thing is it's not a knock on Scarlett Johansson, because I thought In Her Shell was fantastic, or In Her Skin. Was that it?
Oh, Beneath the Skin.
Beneath the Skin. I thought she was great in that. I thought that was had one of the just freakiest endings I've ever seen in a movie. So I really enjoyed that. So I'm not anti Scarlett Johansson, but I'm anti bad screenwriter. So
I feel like she just gets roles that are like, you know, we need like a hot action like lady, and we want you. You're the only one we can hire. We'll pay you whatever, and she'll be like, you know, yeah, of course.
And then of course the zookeeper's wife is coming out with what is it? Daniel Brühl basically plays the exact same role that he played in it's gonna drive me nuts. What was the movie he was in? Inglourious Bastards.
So, oh, yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. I just feel like if you start getting typecast as Nazis, it's time to maybe rethink your career choices.
Yeah.
So.
Or get off 4chan.
Take a page out of Christoph Waltz's book.
Yeah, exactly. So this has been another edition of Cavs the Podcast. And I'm Nate Smith here with Evil Genius and Mitch. How do I pronounce that last name?
Sounds Sucan. Like Toucan. Sounds Sucan. Like Toucan.
That's right. Sucan Sam? No.
That's right.
And as always, go Cavs.
Go Cavs.
Go Cavs.
Thank you for listening to Cavs the Blogs Podcast. Check back soon for some more fun with your favorite bloggers. There's a fire.